Eyes of Tammy Faye movie that's coming in September. September 17th, it'll be released. And the trailer went online yesterday. You can go watch this and marvel at how Jessica Chastain has turned into Tammy Faye, and Andrew Garfield is Jim Baker. But David Chadwick is still with us. Brett Jensen is with me for the rest of this hour here on a Thursday. But this is always a fascinating conversation to so many people, and you see how much attention the whole legend of Heritage USA and PTL still gets, David. All these years later, they're making a feature film about it, and it really is. I mean, it's a tragic story. But it's got all the makings of a Hollywood movie, and the three of us and so many people listening to WBT right now, I know, remember this because we all experienced it. Jensen asked you a question off the air, and I think it's a fascinating question, but what was it like to do what you do and did back then during a time where not only PTL, but there were Jimmy Swagger. I mean, there were five or six more scandals that really happened in succession during that era. What was it like to be a pastor and try to navigate through that time in America?
Yeah, Bo, it was really hard because you just seemed to have one scandal after another. And what we saw with Jim and Tammy Faye and the other people as well, like Swagger and others, it was the unholy trinity of money, sex, and power. You know, as we look at the three things that mostly motivate people to fall, all three of those were a part of the PTL scandal. So here in Charlotte, there were a lot of us who just tried to faithfully do ministry, do what God called us to do. We'd spend hours visiting the sick in the hospitals and caring for the impoverished and feeding people and all of those things. Never gets noticed, but you got the headlines of Jim and Tammy Faye with money, sex, and power, all three being there. So a lot of people would bleed over into our ministries with the opinion of, you must be like him. Mm-hmm. And we had to spend an inordinate amount of time just saying, no, that's not us. And just like in sports, there are some bad apples. In politics, there are some bad apples. In all industries, there are some bad apples. In ministry, there are some bad apples as well. But the vast majority of us are trying to do the best we can with what God has called us to do. During that time period, it was very difficult to have to watch that occurring and then have to stave off all the questions regarding, are you like that as well, when we really weren't, but people would naturally associate that and become skeptics. And Brett, you even mentioned of the parodies that were done with PTL, which is a very biblical phrase, praise the Lord. It became Pass the Loot in a lot of songs that were being sung then, and it just disparaged the God that many of us love so much and try to serve faithfully.
You know, and I asked you this off the air, and I hope you don't mind me asking this on air, but, you know, you are Charlotte's minister, Charlotte's reverend.
Well, you're kind.
But Billy Graham is the nation's reverend, was the nation's reverend, and you're Charlotte's reverend. You've been doing this for 40 years and exceedingly successful at it. So I asked you, you know, how many opportunities do people ask you to be a televangelist?
Yeah. Well, I had chances to go on television. I had opportunities to do a national, maybe international broadcast ministry. And this is just me. It's not to say that those doing it are wrong. But Malcolm Muggeridge, the famous British commentator, once said that if Jesus lived today, that he would not have three temptations. He would have four temptations. The fourth temptation would be an international television ministry. And because there's something that happens, I think, in a minister's heart when that red light goes on. You sometimes, I think, believe you're more important than you really are. You think that the world revolves around you and that somehow you should have special advocacy for whatever. And I just knew in my heart that wouldn't be wise for me. You know, I was called to be a local pastor, and that call is still upon my life, as we mentioned in this new ministry that I'm doing now at Moments of Hope Church. I'm called to be a church pastor, and now at Providence Day School starting this Sunday at 10 a.m. But I just had that heart as my heart. And Brett, I just knew that that red light would cause something within my soul that would not be healthy for me. And I don't think it's healthy for many people. I don't think God shares his glory much with anybody. And Jim Baker took a place that God himself only holds.
I feel like Brett and me are here tempting David Chadwick, because as he's saying that, I'm looking at a red light.
Oh, so. I know. I'm looking at the reflection of the red light in these screens. And I was like, well.
Well, yeah. You know, Tammy Faye Messner passed away in 2007. Mm-hmm. Jim Baker is very much still around. Yeah, what do you make of Jim Baker in 2021?
Well, he has started another television ministry, and it's out in Missouri, and he's interestingly doing a lot of what he formerly did. So there are skeptics who are going, why in the world is he allowed back on the air? But you know, he paid his penance. He has done his duty in prison, and he's come out and feels like this is what he's supposed to do. I'm not attracted to that kind of ministry, you know, to hawk things like special prayer scarves and special prayer oils and that kind of thing. I just don't think we should be doing. I don't think we're supposed to get that complicated. I'm not sure we're supposed to try to earn that much money. So who am I to judge? I can't throw stones at him. I have enough stones to throw at myself. But I question why, if you've done something once and it didn't work, you're going back to that same kind of thing. But that's what he does, and evidently he feels called to it. I can't judge him.
Well, and I think Brett brought up last hour the fact that Billy Graham reached out to Jim Baker even in Jim Baker's lowest moment. And I remember back when Billy Graham passed away, February a few years ago, Jim Baker came back that week to pay his respects, and that I just remember thinking about the visual and the optics of it, and just again thinking back to an era right where we are now, right in our own backyard, that we'll never forget.
Well, it was such a big story then; it won't be forgotten anytime.
I highly recommend you listening to this entire interview, which will be at WBT.com. But I want to focus in on one part right here where you and the county manager, Brett, talked about Tent City.
Unprovoked, you came out and just went after the city about Tent City and allowing things to happen and how you reached out to the sheriff and everything else and the city manager. Generally, you don't find people in government that will do that. So did you catch a lot of grief for that?
No, I didn't. You know, it was calculated. I mean, I'll be perfectly honest about that, because people said they wanted to help me and that they were going to help me, and then when needed to help me, they wouldn't, or they didn't, or they couldn't for whatever reason. And so, you know, that for me, that couldn't go unchecked. I really needed to be able to say, you know, it's not right what's happened here, and that the county's left holding the bag for this, because I think that's what they were hoping, that they were just going to be able to bail, and that I wasn't going to do anything about it. And I think the point I made is, don't do that to me, because I will not let you off the hook. When you make a commitment to help me, I expect you to follow through.
You know, between the city manager and Sheriff McFadden, and I mean, there were some, for lack of a better term, daggers thrown.
You know? Absolutely. But, you know, when you're in the battle, sometimes you have to fight hard. So, and that was a very, very, very difficult situation that we were dealing with.
And I think maybe, correct me if I'm wrong, but probably part of the problem that maybe irked you was the fact that, correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't part of that on Tent City, like actually on city property?
Yes, it was.
So that, I mean, I can understand, like, why are we having to take care of something that's on the city property?
Because they were afraid of the optics associated with having police and other folks associated with moving people off of that property. But again, it was their property.
There is more of this in the entire conversation about what was going on behind the scenes when some of these decisions were made. And she had to take stances on certain issues that, at least at the time, appeared like she was on her own mountain.
Yeah, you know,
or should I say on her own island?
Yeah, you know, and I even said to her, I said, you know, Dina, I said later that day on air, I said that was a very calculated decision that she made. I don't think it was just off the cuff. And she said, you're right. It was extremely calculated in the way she did, you know, in the way she handled that. And you know what? Like I said this last hour, and I'll say it again. There are a lot of things about Dina DiIorio, but I mean, if nothing else, she's very, very direct and she's very honest. And that is very admirable, regardless of what you like, what she's actually saying or doing. The fact that she's actually honest, I have all the respect for her. I really do.
When she said they wouldn't or couldn't or didn't.
I mean, here we are a few months later, and she's still saying the same thing. And you know, I love the fact when she said, if you're going to tell me you're going to do something, then you don't do it. Yeah, that's not going to happen.
It reminded me. It sent me back to my childhood. I was watching. I'll never forget this. There was this. You ever watch Different Strokes?
Oh, of course.
Remember Dudley?
I do remember Dudley.
Who was Arnold's friend?
Arnold's friend, yeah.
Well, Dudley had a conversation with his mom on one of these episodes, and I don't know why this is etched in my head. And he said, you get it, Dudley? You get it? He's good. You better get it, because if you don't get it, you're going to get it. Got it?
I just remember the gooch.
Oh, yeah. The gooch.
The gooch.
Man, you and I are tracking. This is scary. 9:27. Next thing we know, we're going to start talking about Charlene. Know who Charlene was? Willis's girlfriend?
Oh.
Who played her?
I don't. Was that Janet Jackson?
I think so.
I think
our good friend Bill Graham, legal analyst. How you doing?
Good morning. Good morning, Brooke.
Good morning, sir.
How you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Got some things to bump off Bill Graham here, and there's been a bit of a theme the last few weeks. I've been asking you about the whole incentive thing, and last week we talked about Governor Cooper the day before talking about offering the cash cards if you get the vaccine, and then we were talking about West Virginia. Well, this strikes me maybe even more interesting. Students at Rhodes College, this is in Tennessee, Memphis, Tennessee, who haven't had their COVID-19 vaccine will have to pay a $1,500 fee each semester starting this fall that they don't get vaccinated. The charge will begin once the FDA fully approves the COVID-19 vaccine. And this, they say, is essentially to cover the costs that will be incurred when they have to keep doing COVID tests for people who refuse to get the vaccination. But this is taking it one step further. It's one thing to talk about whether or not you've had the vaccination and have to disclose that. It's another thing to offer incentives. But now, and I know that last week we talked about public versus private, and that's a big delineation point, but the idea now that you would be charged more money because you haven't had the vaccine, that's a new layer, isn't it?
It is, and I'm sure, now Rhodes is a very, very good school and great faculty. I know a little bit about it, but you got to wonder, what were they doing with their PPP money? So I don't know that they're going to be harmed financially if that's the predicate for the fine or the threat of the fine. So, you know, they're welcome to charge the students. It's a private institution. They can do as they like in that regard. It probably has bad optics and bad PR surrounding it, but also providing a great incentive. They're getting government money to provide these tests to the students to keep the virus at bay. So I don't know. I think they may have created a problem for themselves that they didn't anticipate.
Well, and there's the blurring of the lines, right? I mean, yep. Private university, private college, but using public funds. So it gets harder and harder to separate the two and know how to draw that line.
Yeah, I was pulling this up, and Rhodes says they've signed and returned to the Department of Education the certification agreement and will use no less than 50% of the funds. Rhodes is going to receive $602,973 from the Department of Education. I don't know. Now you have a PR problem. They may want to rethink that thing.
Well, I'm curious, and excuse my ignorance on this, and I don't mean to beat a dead horse here, but in terms of, I know when I went to public college, and we had insurance, and that was part of the tuition fees and everything else, which covered it. So if I got sick and I went to the college infirmary, or if I broke a leg and they would set it at the college infirmary or whatever, I just assumed that when you did that at private school as well, that when you went to a private school and you paid the tuition, part of your student insurance or health insurance was part of that.
True.
And so I just figured, well, then, so why are you charging me an extra $1,500 if my insurance is already covering this? That's what I don't understand.
It's a head scratcher. I think they're trying to get 100% compliance among their students and faculty. And I would like to know if Rhodes is going to also penalize their staff and faculty for the very same thing, and we'll have to see if this story gets any legs, but obviously we're talking about it, so it must mean something. Mm-hmm. I hope that this is not a trend. Certainly, I think you've got a lot of compliance with students throughout the university and college system in the United States, if for no other reason, because the NCAA has been all over this issue. Mm-hmm. And you know, athletes and tournaments and mm-hmm. players have had to be tested even more than the regular non-athletic students. So we'll have to see how it unfolds and see if it gets further attention.
Talking to Bill Graham here, legal analyst, and here's another legal story. Rhode Island Democrat Senator Sheldon Whitehouse and Louisiana Republican Senator John Kennedy have asked the Justice Department and the U.S. Marshals Service for information and documents about the last 10 years of trips for members of the Supreme Court, the United States Supreme Court. The Supreme Court police handles protection for the justices. I have never really thought much about this, but what kind of, I mean, the security detail that a Supreme Court justice gets, is that, is that on the level of a president or a vice president, or?
No. No, it's executed by the U.S. Marshal Service, and certainly whenever a Supreme Court justice travels, they have a certain amount of security, nowhere near that President Biden or Vice President Harris would receive. So, you know, there is an expense, and Congress does have the oversight, and those gentlemen, those senators, are members of the Judiciary Committee. They do perform that function. They can request the level of detail. I think probably what the senators are trying to do is bring the court's disclosure in line with that the members of Congress have to execute and disclose to the public. You know, where'd you go? Who'd you see? What did the public spend their money on? What was the purpose of the trip? That kind of thing. A lot of these trips, if you'll recall, when Justice Scalia was alive, he made a lot of hunting trips. He was a big hunter. And he would go to these lodges, and there was a dust-up one time where one of the owners of one of the lodges had something before the court at some term that was close in time. And so that raised some eyebrows, and they want to make sure that the justices aren't doing something or going places and being wined and dined by people that would have matters before the court and then them not recuse themselves. And, you know, so it's not an unreasonable request, but it can become burdensome and also can become a little bit intimidating if they get too far into the weeds.
Well, yeah, and one of the reasons why I was asking you about the amount of security, I didn't expect it to be what it is for the president and vice president, but I also, I think it a pretty reasonable assumption on my part that it's more than your average congressman or U.S. senator would get, because, I mean, we're talking about people who are serving for life, and then you get into the idea of when you start looking through the receipts for somebody like a Supreme Court justice, for somebody that's been on there as long as maybe Scalia was, that can get pretty lengthy.
It can, and they're often invited to speak in far-flung places, and they have a very busy docket and a busy schedule. There's a lot to do at the court. A lot of people don't realize that. It's a very, very busy place. Since there's only very few of them, then every law school in the country will issue an invitation to come speak at their graduation. Businesses want to hear from them. Business groups wants to hear from them. Interest groups want their attention. So, you know, they're very busy people, and they travel a lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, so obviously Justice Ginsburg didn't, you know, towards the end, but it's a reasonable request as long as it doesn't become unreasonable. So we'll have to wait and see how, if anything untoward unfolds. I don't really anticipate that, but we'll see.
Yeah, you mentioned Scalia and the hunting trips. There's some research I found about Sotomayor, A Night at the Opera, and you know, the late Ruth Bader Ginsburg, you know, would go to, you know, theater shows and such and things like that. So these are the kind of things that they're turning up. But I'm always fascinated by how it works for Supreme Court justices versus other people, because they're the only ones that have a lifetime term, like I said. Hey, New Sarum Brewing Company up there in Salisbury, we talked last week before we get out of here. I wanted to get an update because you were telling us among the things happening at your brewery, incentives there for vaccines.
Yeah, we had some folks show up, had some folks get their $25 gift card, and I wouldn't say that it was land office business, but it was okay. And I know North Carolina's going to kick the tires on rolling out this lottery thing, a la Ohio or West Virginia. And we'll have to continue to push the rock on getting everyone to get a vaccine. You're going to get, there's still going to be a percentage of the population that is simply not going to do it. We have to accept that fact. If we can get to 70-30, I think that'll be a victory. But as you reported on the news earlier, most of the counties are green, and or a lot of the counties are green, and I think the rates of infection are substantially down, which is a great thing.
Well, Governor Cooper is supposed to speak today, and we'll probably talk.
He's
more
here
about,
in Salisbury.
Talk more about this further incentives, maybe inching closer to somewhere like West Virginia, and we can probably talk about that next week. Bill Graham, always enjoy the conversation. New Sarum Brewing Company, and of course, this segment brought to you by the law offices of Wallace and Graham. Have a great weekend.
Y'all have a great weekend. Talk to you next week.
All right, 9:44 on WBT. We'll end in just a few minutes here. One more piece of Brett Jensen's interview with Dina DiOrio talking about COVID ambassadors. This is fascinating, I think. Right now, traffic. Here's Pam Warner.
So things are looking a lot better this morning on your roadways, not as heavily impacted by traffic. We do have a few wrecks you want to watch out for. We're still in the Hickory Grove area in the final clearing stages. The 12,000 block of Rocky River Church Road is still seeing reports of an accident as well. This one, Issa Boulevard at Kenilworth Avenue. But that one's only been there for about 25 minutes. Going to give it a little longer to clear. And the lights are currently malfunctioning. Tom Hunter Road at Log Cabin Road. You already know what to do. Go ahead and treat that as a four-way stop. I'm Pam Warner, WBT Traffic.
I'm Steve Counts in the WBT News Center. First-time jobless claims continuing their downward trend.